Welcome to the Successful Farming Weeds Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Before we get into the podcast, we would like to thank our sponsor, FMC. Start clean and stay clean with the overlapping residual herbicides from FMC.
Control the toughest weeds with overlapping residuals. Lock in the longest lasting control for your soybean fields. A pre-emergence application of an Authority brand herbicide plus a post-application of Anthem Max herbicide establishes the overlapping residual control key to safeguarding your soybean seasons. This pairing is a heavy-duty economical strategy against Palmer amaranth, water hemp, kochia, and more. Visit your FMC retailer or lockin.ag.fmc.com today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Last July, the Environmental Protection Agency released its draft herbicide strategy, which proposed mitigations for more than 900 species and critical habitats. The mitigations are designed to reduce the potential impact of herbicides to comply with the Endangered Species Act. Jake Lee, the Deputy Assistant Administrator for Pest Programs, and Dr. Stanley Culpepper, Weed Science Extension Specialist from the University of Georgia, sat down with Successful Farming editor Adrian Held to discuss the Endangered Species Act and the herbicide strategy and what they will mean for pesticide registrations and use at the farm level moving forward.
Thank you for joining me today to discuss the Endangered Species Act and the herbicide strategy and what they're going to mean for pesticide registrations and then use at the farm level moving forward. Really appreciate both of you joining me this morning.
Yep, happy to be here. Thank you for inviting us.
All right. So the Endangered Species Act has been on the books for 50 years. What brought about the effort to comply now?
So I can take this one. And again, this is Jake Lee from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. I think there's two main points here. One is that, you know, for decades, we actually have been trying to comply to some degree. It's just we focused a lot on this, trying to get the science right, trying to perfect a risk assessment process. And the problem there is that we weren't actually adopting protections for endangered species. And what the Endangered Species Act requires is that federal agencies like us actually protect endangered species, right? We can't spend decades and decades arguing over trying to perfect the science and a risk assessment. And so we were sued, right? We were sued by a number of environmental groups, and we keep on losing in court. In fact, we just had a streptomycin use vacated in December of last year for a failure to comply with the Endangered Species Act. And so there is basically no end in sight to these court losses unless we figure out a way to fully comply with the Endangered Species Act. And so that's really how we got to the current state.
What are some of the proposed steps to comply within the new herbicide strategy? I know what was released last July was the draft, and you all took comments and are working on the final version to be released in May. But what are some of the proposed steps to comply with ESA?
Yeah. So one thing is I actually have some positive late-breaking news, which is just on Wednesday, the court that has overseen the settlement for our ESA lawsuits that actually include the herbicide strategy, finalized an extension of the herbicide strategy. So we had sought an extension till the end of August, and the other parties to the settlement agreed on extension, and the court signed off on it. So now the new deadline is the end of August rather than the end of May. So that's actually really good news, because that gives us a bit more breathing room to, one, incorporate the public comments that we've received from many people, including Dr. Culpepper here. You know, I think you all know we've got about 20,000 comments on the herbicide strategy. It is a lot of comments to work through. So that gives us more time to work through the comments and incorporate into the final strategy. It also gives us more time to figure out some of the implementation mechanics for the herbicide strategy. And that's really the answer to your question, right? What are the steps to comply with the herbicide strategy? So a few things. One is that we are still developing that process, and it's going to still take, you know, some time to figure out, for example, what are record keeping requirements? How do we work with the state lead agencies on enforcement issues? How do we ensure that we can communicate the mitigation menus to all the people who need to see them? How do we consider additional mitigation options, right? That we know in particular specialty crop growers have asked us about. So there's a lot of really important issues that we will continue to work out. That's the first part of my response. The other thing I think to keep in mind for the herbicide strategy is that is just remember the herbicide strategy itself is not a rule, it's not a legal requirement. It simply is a framework for how we will identify mitigation measures in the actual FIFRA registration or registration review decisions, right? It's really in that FIFRA process where the legal requirement comes into play, when where people have to actually comply with the labels once they're actually stamped and put on a pesticide product. So that's still going to take some time, and I can talk a little bit about that later. But I just wanted to flag that for you. Now, in terms of the actual steps, if that's what you're getting at, for how the mitigation measures in the pesticide, in the herbicide strategy will actually translate into pesticide labels, the main thing to highlight is that we are using a point system, right? Which basically means that each labeled use of a pesticide may be assigned a number of points based on how risky that pesticide is to a particular endangered species. So the number of points would be higher for situations that are riskier to endangered species and lower for less risky situations. So then you imagine you have the total number of points, right, that are required for the use of a particular herbicide in this particular situation or use. And then those number of points are compared to a list of options, the mitigation options that a user can pick and choose from to reduce the movement of pesticides off a field into endangered species habitat. And each of those options is assigned a number of points based on how well it works to reduce pesticide movement. So then a user would basically say, okay, for my application, I'm going to make this up 6 points, right? And then that person can look at the mitigation menu to say, okay, what are the measures that can get me to 6 points, right? They can pick and choose from that menu to get to 6 points. And this is specific to runoff mitigation, not aerial drift. That's something else. But for runoff, they can tally up the number of options that gets them to 6 points. And when they get to 6 points, then they implement those measures. And so that's how one goes about complying with this point system, which is on you. Let me add one final thing to this and then pause. And I'm sure Dr. Culpepper might have something to say about all of this too. So far, everything we're talking about pertains to the requirements on a label itself, right? This is what most users have traditionally been used to seeing, right? Looking at a label, it could be a few hundred pages, and they'll see a point system and so on and so forth. What not, everyone knows about is that these labels are also going to start directing people to a website that we've created called the Bulletins Live 2. Bulletins Live 2 is basically a web-based system that we're going to use to communicate if a pesticide user in a particular area of the country has additional protections that they need to adopt for endangered species in those areas. In other words, those protections are specific to the species and the parts of the country where the protections are needed. And the reason we have this two-part system is that we don't want to burden everyone in the country or even everyone in a county or a state with additional protections that are needed for just a small percentage of endangered species, right? You might have an endangered species that's just particularly sensitive to an herbicide and it lives in, let's say, 5% of a county, right? We don't want everyone else in that county to have to adopt those additional protections. We want to limit it to just those areas where the species needs that protection. Well, the only way to describe those areas, that 5%, is through this website, because you can imagine it's never going to fit on the label, right? We
Right.
might have hundreds and hundreds of these maps. So that's where the pesticide labels are going to basically tell someone, okay, you also have to check this website to see if there are any additional restrictions specific to your area and the time you plan to apply the pesticide. So I'm going to stop there for this question.
Stanley, did you have any?
Yeah, only thing I would add, obviously Jake has the complete expert here, but I would just say the key word there is proposed. The proposed herbicide strategy from the ag stakeholder, from a farmer, from extension, is very complicated and is at times very difficult to understand. But I want to thank the EPA really for giving us the opportunity to provide comments, right? So that's what really this period we're in now is we provided all kinds of science, all kinds of comments. I had over 60 growers contribute to our comments, right? So although there's a lot of discomfort on the proposed package, it's really wonderful that we're working together to move to a more science-based final strategy, right? So I think it's really important for your listeners to understand that the things that are in the proposed strategy won't necessarily be exactly the same that's in the final. And hopefully they'll be improved by a whole lot of really sound and complete science.
My next question kind of relates back to the mitigation measures and the points that surround those. Could those point values change or additional mitigation measures be added to account for education credits before the final plan in August? And then I think another important question to address is what will happen if they don't have enough efficacy points required by the label?
First of all, really completely agree with Stanley on that very important point he made, right? That this is just a proposal. And I'm actually gonna talk about two changes that we plan to make between the proposal and the final. And those are just two of many that we're actually actively working on later. But to sort of answer your sort of question around I'm sorry, if you can tell me which order you would like me to take these questions again.
I think since we were talking about the points, were the and you know the fact that it was the proposed strategy and the final one is still coming, will there be any changes to point values or additional measures added like the education credit?
Sure. Yeah. So I can't get into specifics around what, if any, points will change. Other than that, I can tell you about how we will think about this more generally, which is as information becomes available on the efficacy of a measure, right, at reducing runoff, we will consider that information in adjusting the number of points that a mitigation measure gets. So let me give you an example. Let's say right now the best information about a particular mitigation measure indicates that it's low efficacy. In other words, it has some effectiveness at reducing runoff, but not a whole bunch. So then we just assign it 1 point because right now we're on a 3-point scale, 1, 2, 3, and one corresponds to low efficacy, two medium, and three high efficacy. So let's say this measure only gets 1 point at the moment. And then let's say sometime in the next 2 years, a university such as Dr. Culpepper's work or someone else does research that indicates, well, this measure is actually more efficacious at reducing runoff than the information we have today, right? Then we can bump up the number of points to either 2 or 3 based on that data. So this is what we really mean by being science-based, right? If the science indicates effectiveness, we can very much adjust the number of points. So that's one way the point system can change. The other way is that we can add new mitigation measures to the menu. So we know there are a number of measures that are not on the menu right now, and that people have proposed in the public comment period for the draft herbicide strategy. Our plan, not just our plan, but our team is actually actively looking through those comments and considering which ones we may be able to add to the menu. And again, this is all based on whether there are data available about the efficacy of those measures, right, that are not currently on our menu. So that's another way that the menu and the point system can change. And then the final thing I want to say about this is that we are later on this year creating and releasing a draft online mitigation menu where the whole menu of mitigation options and a point system will live. And the reason we're putting it online as opposed to stamped on a physical label is so that we can rapidly adjust the number of points and we can expand the number of options in the menu as data come in, right? Otherwise, you can imagine, let's say there's a new mitigation measure that everyone agrees makes sense, and we want to give that option to growers right away. Well, that won't happen until we stamp hundreds, if not thousands, of labels, which is going to take many, many years, right? So we need to bypass that system. And the best way for us to do so is to use this online menu system that we can basically just go to our website and adjust so then people have access to these new mitigation measures.
I'll take what Jake said and give an example really for your listeners. So let's talk about cover crops. We're all familiar with cover crops. Right now, cover crops, and again, it's just proposed. We don't get excited, it's proposed, but it has a category of one, right? So we have submitted some data that the way we grow a cover crop, we can reduce the movement of a pesticide off the field by 98%, right? So we think that's a three, right? So we submit that data. We give them a chance to evaluate the data. Now, they could easily come back and say, well, yes, this is how you get a three, but over here, maybe you go grow a cover crop and it only gets 3 inches. Maybe it only deserves a one, right? So you can see the complexity of this and the information that's been provided to the agency to work through, right? So some of us maybe want a category one, two, and three for cover crops. We also are very interested and engaged in clarification, right? There are many mitigation measures on the menu that we don't fully understand, right? One of them would be something like the rate reduction one. We'd really like to have better communication and better understanding among scientists, much less those actual users. So again, proposed, it was very powerful. Proposed document, agriculture across the board has come together like I haven't seen in my career in 25 years to try to provide some really, really good science-based information for the agency to evaluate. They have to be overwhelmed. There's no question about it. But at least they're allowing us to engage with them. And I think just from what we've seen recently, we're making progress, and we're making progress in the name of science.
I think this might be a question, Stanley, that you might be better able to address. So if I'm utilizing multiple chemistries on my farm, or even if I'm utilizing, in one tank mix, how complex will it be to remain compliant with these new labels?
So this is actually a really good question, and this is really identifies where the ESA process interacts with herbicide resistance, right? So I'm focusing on herbicides. Your entomologist would focus on obviously insecticides. But when I develop a program, I need the whole program because our toolbox is challenged. So what I'll have to do is look at my program. I'll have to find the highest number, right? Whatever product is that has the highest mitigation number I need to have for that program. Then I'll have to figure out how to help that grower implement that number. So that will be the key. So there may be a lot of products that we don't have to implement one or two or three mitigation measures. But then if I have one that I have to implement, more than that, I have to develop the whole process around that because I can't pull a tool out, right? When you look at resistance management, you look at sustainability, the integrated programs is, and I'll stress this, and I do on every one of these types of meetings, is herbicides alone are not sustainable. We are better than that, right? We have to be diversified. Some parts of the world just tillage. I'm a conservation tillage guy, is hand weeding, but still that component of the system for sustainability is a sound herbicide program, and whatever the most limiting factor is, that's what I'll have to set that through. That's why clarification on the mitigation menu, flexibility, like Jake is talking about, is so essential. There are no two farms alike, right? There are no two farms. The programs I developed for a farm in Georgia are nothing like the family farm in North Carolina, right? So I think that's important, but that's the way we'll have to do it. But we can't really answer your question until we get to that final strategy. But again, the conversations that are occurring are absolutely the right conversations.
I agree with everything Dr. Kolkmer said. Let me add sort of one or two more points to this question of what happens when a farmer is using multiple chemistries, right? And what compliance looks like. So the general principle is that a user must follow the most restrictive label language for every pesticide, right, in a tank mix. So nothing about the ESA actually changes that, right? This is just basic sort of FIFRA requirements. And we understand that figuring out the restrictions to follow when there are multiple pesticides in a tank mix can be challenging. You've already heard about the point system at this point. We're using it in conjunction with the mitigation pick list. I think it's important to note that it's important to EPA that the mitigation options in the list be the same across pesticides where possible. So this basically means that the comparison between runoff mitigations will come down to users comparing points for runoff. We want this consistency and simplicity across labels, right? And to make it as straightforward as possible. So I think that's another way to think about what happens when there are multiple pesticides mixed in a tank. We're still working through all of that. Once the herbicide strategy is finalized and we apply it to different decisions, I think you'll see more of this in the flesh.
My next question is, who will be liable? So, in the past, whoever was in the cab of the sprayer was the liable party for any negative effects of a herbicide application. Does the liability lie on the person who's actually making those applications on the farm, but does not have control over the land? Who is confirming that these mitigation measures have been met prior to the application? And does it need to fall instead on the landowner who may not be meeting those mitigations?
I can take that one. This is a good example of why we asked for 3 more months. And when I said, at the start of this interview that we were still trying to figure out some really important mechanics, right, of how do we implement the herbicide strategy. These legal enforcement questions are ones that our team is still actively discussing with the state lead agencies and with our Office of Enforcement Compliance. I think the brief answer at the moment is that pesticide user, in combination with the landowner, right, or the renter, may need to ensure that whatever requirements are on the label are met. So it may be all of those folks really putting their heads together and trying to figure this out. For now, I can say that we really encourage pesticide users to either print or save a PDF copy of any documents that describe label obligations and how they were met, such as the ESA Bulletins Live system I talked about earlier, or a printout from EPA's mitigation menu website. This is not a legal requirement at the moment, right? We haven't made this a legal requirement, but just as a matter of good practice, we just encourage people to print a copy of this for their records.
Many of the mitigation measures, such as the grass waterways filter strips, will require physical manipulation of the farmland. And that kind of goes back to the question that I just asked, but a large percentage of farmland is not farmed by the owner. So, what happens in the scenario where a landowner maybe doesn't agree to take land out of production to meet these mitigation measures?
Yeah. So this is where, we are trying to increase the number of options, right, for growers to pick and choose from the mitigation menu, because we do know that this is a real issue. We've seen it in the public comments. We've heard about it in public meetings. And you already know from what I said earlier that some herbicides will absolutely require more points and therefore more measures than others. So growers might be able to choose chemistries or pesticides that require fewer points to help them meet legal requirements, right? So that's sort of one way that if we can provide more options on the table, pesticide user can pick and choose from what works best in their situation. From the standpoint of the landowner not agreeing to take land out of production and so forth, we're still trying to figure out the enforcement component of these mitigation menus, as I said earlier. It may be that there's multiple parties involved, including the landowner and the renter, who needs to have conversations, right, around what mitigation measures can actually be implemented in a particular area. But I think the gist of what I say, what I'm trying to convey, is that we are trying to put as many options on the table to minimize this situation.
The other thing I would add, I'm kind of the optimist often in the room, but when you're working with the landowner in the farm, obviously that's very, very common. There's a potential if this was to work out to actually have some positives. Maybe we can develop some programs within RCS that can improve our land and capability. I'll give you an example. When I was a child on our family farm, my dad today would tell you the best thing we ever did was put in waterways, and we wouldn't have been able to do that without working with the NRCS back at that time, right? So maybe there's some avenues as we learn and we work through the process where we can actually improve the land and improve production and actually assist. Now, the key again is if we have a landowner that's not willing to change or adopt any of these significantly very expensive land moving type of mitigation measures, we have to have the flexibility on that mitigation menu, and that's where extension consultants, advisors will be very, very important in helping make sure that we can do that. I'm optimistic, and what I want to see is I want to see an opportunity for all of the above, right? If we want to make the land better, the options are there. If we don't have the time to invest the money and the resources, or the landowner's not willing, we still have a way to accomplish what we need to do to implement a sound resistance management program.
Thank you. So my next question is, how will this final herbicide strategy be rolled out? So I'll direct that one to Jake.
So a few things to consider. One is that, as I said earlier, we now have the 3-month extension till end of August. And when it gets finalized, we will post the final strategy on our website and communicate it as broadly as we can. So that's one thing. Second thing is just remember that the herbicide strategy by itself does not impose any requirements whatsoever. It's simply a framework that we're going to use to identify mitigation measures in the FIFR registration review or registration decisions. We expect that the herbicide strategy will begin to apply to real-world pesticide decisions beginning either later this year or next year. So let me give an example. Once the strategy is finalized and applied to a registration review case, it will go through this chemical-specific public comment process under FIFRA, right? That's what we've had on the books for many, many years, and that's just a FIFRA sort of process. It's nothing to do with ESA. And of course, all stakeholders, everyone in the public, can comment on those proposed mitigation measures before they're actually finalized. So that if someone commented on a draft herbicide strategy, they still have the opportunity to comment on how we will apply a final herbicide strategy to a specific chemical. All of this still takes additional time, right, before the updated labels are actually in commerce and in the hands of growers. So for a registration review case, right, this is again for existing pesticide active ingredients, the typical timeframe between a decision being issued and a revised label being stamped is 2 to 3 years at the moment. And then after a label is stamped, it still takes an additional 18 months for products with new labels to typically enter the channels of trade. So that's the registration review process. In terms of new registrations, we expect that we can start applying the herbicide strategy once it's finalized into new active ingredient registrations. So those are on somewhat different timeframes. And then the last thing I'll say is that we expect that it's also going to take some time for these bulletins that I mentioned, these endangered species bulletins, to actually be developed for the herbicide strategy and then implemented as part of labels. And we plan to increase the stakeholder outreach through webinars and other educational efforts before the growers actually see the first labels that reflect the final herbicide strategy. I think some of you know that we had already hosted a webinar to demonstrate how the Bulletin's Live 2 system works in November of last year. And we plan to host another webinar to demonstrate how the mitigation menu website will work later in this year.
Stanley, what education needs are being planned ahead of the rollout?
Well, so I'm in my 3rd year, right? So I train, I don't know, 4,500 people a year, and they're already like, are we hearing about Endangered Species Act again? They're very knowledgeable of what is going on. Now, I realize that's not going on across maybe the country, but this year, in the last 6 months, you have seen a massive effort by extension, at least by weed scientists across the country, to share some really, really good information. We also shared a lot of that information, driving hard to get comments. Your listeners, every time I do this, you guys have got to help us. You've got to put your product on target. You got to keep it there. And then you have to help us with comments. You have to make sure we're representing who you are, what you are, and what we're trying to do together, right? We want to steward these pesticides. We want to protect wildlife, but we also have to remain viable and provide food, feed, and fiber for the world, right? So I think that process is going. I'm very proud of the last 6 to 8 months. The first 2 years, there wasn't a lot of other folks doing stuff, but we're really getting there. And it is something that's really powerful. And you guys in the popular press, you're obviously sharing information, which is absolutely critical. And I think the key, and that what worries me the most, is we have to stay aligned, right? When you want to mess something up, you cause confusion, right? So what we have to avoid, and we have to be very careful about, is making sure we're all on the same page, regardless of whether it's the regulatory agency, whether it's a university, whether it's popular press, whether it's a commission group. We have to be sharing the correct information in the same format that our applicators can interpret.
Thank you. So we've reached our time, and I want to honor the time that you guys have committed. So I just wanted to say thank you. Is there anything else that you wanted to add as we wrap up today?
From my perspective, no, I think we've covered all the main points. Again, the draft herbicide strategy is just a draft. We expect a number of changes before it's going to be finalized. And I think everyone in the world will know when it's finalized because we will blast it out. Thank you for the interview. And thank you, Dr. Culpepper, for all of your support and help to actually help our agency comply.
I can't say enough about you. I wish all our growers would have an opportunity to meet you. We're blessed that we've had a bunch of our growers have an opportunity to meet Jake. He is just so impressive. He's a great leader. He's committed not only to protecting the wildlife, but he's also committed to family farm remaining sustainable and the support of science, right? So we can't thank you enough. And if there's anything that any of us scientists can do to help the agency make really, really good decisions based on science, that's all we want. You know that. We're here to help you and help inform our growers. And again, I stress the most important thing to me in this current era that we're in, every single one of us that applies a pesticide, we have to be committed to putting these products on target and making sure they stay there. That's what we want to do. And what scientists need to do is help our growers achieve that. That is what we need to be doing. And we can do it. And we've proven we can do it with some really good science.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dr. Culpepper. Those are spot on.
Thank you so much, guys. And I wish you good luck in your work ahead, Jake, at the EPA, getting our final strategy in place. And look forward to hearing more about it when it rolls out. So thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you both and have a great weekend.
Thank you to our guests today, EPA Assistant Administrator Jake Lee and Dr. Stanley Culpepper, Weed Science Extension Specialist from the University of Georgia. This Weeds Playbook podcast has been brought to you by FMC. Start clean and stay clean with overlapping residual herbicides from FMC. For more news and agricultural information, go to agriculture.com.